You know, when we speak about bluegrass, and we often get into these discussions about what is or isn't bluegrass, we're not going there ever on this program. It's kind of a more inclusive approach to the music form, but we almost always come back to this part about defining bluegrass. There's a banjo in it somewhere. It could be an open back, could be a resonator banjo. And we also know this. Deering Banjo Company has a place in the history of banjos that is almost unparalleled. Of recent years, they have just recently, by the way, sold their 100,000th banjo. The next voice you hear will be mine and Jamie Deering as we talk about Deering Banjo. You know, I'm thinking through this program, this is the most help I've had programming a show. Might be the best thing I've ever done. You're listening to Unreal Bluegrass. This is Jamie Deering. Very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass Jamie Deering. How are you, Jamie?
I'm good, thanks.
And here we are in Nashville.
Yes.
The home of bluegrass music and all that good stuff. And we're down here for other reasons. We're here because we serve on this wonderful board of IBMA. But I also thought it'd be a great time to talk to you about Deering Banjos.
I'm happy to.
I hope that you are. I want to cover a few things with you. I know there was a recent kind of a milestone, and we were talking about that a little bit before, about the 100,000th, if I can even say that, banjo produced by Deering. And I want to talk about that in a minute because that's, to me it's a monumental event. But I also want to talk about your position with Deering and also the fact, and I'll summarize this for you, Deering, I believe, has put themselves in a position in the market, and I don't mean just by sales or volume, but you cover entry-level, high-quality entry-level instruments, the banjos, and to now, I believe, as high-end as you can get,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking about with the Ten Brooks and all those things that are in between there, I don't know of another company, instrument manufacturer even included, that covers that much of the spectrum of instruments that you're producing. With that being an opening, let's talk first about this 100,000 banjo, because I can't believe anybody's ever done that before.
Yeah, we are pretty sure we're the first that actually has one company achieved that number of banjos.
That's a ridiculous number.
It is, and it still to this day just shocks my parents that they actually achieved it. They didn't set out, you know, determined to do it. They just wanted to build good banjos.
I can't. Over what time frame are we talking about?
Let's see. That was in 2014, so that would have been like 39 years.
Wow. I can't imagine there's 100,000 banjos. Of course, I know you sell them all over the world,
right.
But I can't imagine there's 100,000 banjos anywhere. Combined. Now that's exaggerating, but to me that's a lot of, if you just visualize 100,000 banjos, that's a lot of banjos.
It is, and that's just what we've made. So, yeah. And you can add all the historical
yeah.
ones.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
right.
It's
that's
quite
right.
impressive the amount out there.
Tell me about the 100,000 and how that came about. I know that you told me where it went to and what it was used for, but talk about that just a little bit, then I'm going to talk about the product line, if you will.
Sure. Well, the 100,000, you know, being the milestone, we really put in some thought on which model to make it. We put it in the schedule and decided, you know, this one is going to be it. And we went with our Sierra and made it special with engraving, and it says 100,000 on the armrest, because the Sierra banjo has been our, you know, our main, most loved, most sold banjo mm-hmm. that's there. And so that was a special one for all of us and my folks. And my dad designed the inlays on it. It's really...
And your father and mother's names are...
Janet and Greg Deering.
I knew that.
Yes.
And one of the people here, I know who they are.
Yes.
And you, what is your position with Deering? What is that you accomplish for them?
Now I am the VP Public Service and Outreach. So I oversee all PR, artist relations, any events that we attend in person,
okay.
all the social media, press releases, charity, partnership.
It happens to be spring. It's not summer yet, but is this when you get really busy as far as travel commitments because of festival events?
Very, very busy. It kicks off with Merlefest at the end of April.
Okay.
And then it keeps going all the way through IBMA in the fall and sometimes even further.
And you just go from like one place to another? And
pretty much, yeah. It's a really busy time. I'll be in and out of Nashville a lot this summer. For like Summer NAMM and Bonnaroo and the IBMA board meetings
mm-hmm.
this week. And I'll get to do Rocky Grass this year. I have not done that.
Oh,
my mom
okay.
normally does, but
yeah.
she has another commitment. So I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
I see all these great, I'll tell you this, and it was your mother. It was IBMA, the event in Louisville many years ago. And I'm walking around the vendor area, and your mother had a calico banjo, which is light colored.
It's beautiful.
And it was a five string, and I played it, and the sound was just amazing to me. And I went and I played it for a long time, and I sat around and talked to your mother, and she said, "This is a banjo that we keep in the offices if somebody needs a banjo for the studio."
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately knew that this was a special banjo that I had. And if it was something that you come into town and you need a banjo to record with, this was the one. So it was and that's still to this day, that's one of my favorite banjos I've ever played.
Oh, that's great.
I'm sure
it's
long since gone, but it was such a gorgeous, and the sound was just a great kind of a brighter sound. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe that's because the wood was harder. I don't know the.
It is hard maple. Yeah.
Okay. I was guessing that's what it was. I love that banjo, but. The whole line, let's talk a little bit about it. I've hinted at what I would call entry level.
Uh-huh.
Not to mean that they're cheap, but you have to start somewhere. And I believe that Deering has captured far and away that entry level of playable good instruments. And I remember that starting with the Good Time. You don't have to list all the product line, but let's talk about that part. And now, I guess in the last, 4 or 5 years, the high end, which I remember the name from Tony's Triscus banjo as being a Tenbrook. Is that correct?
Well, the Tenbrooks is one of the high-end lines.
Okay.
Because we have the Good Time line, which is the introductory line
that
can take you right up into, you know, becoming a more advanced player. There's, you know, basic Good Time, and then you can add a resonator, mm-hmm. then you can add a tone ring, then you can add spikes. Like, it just keeps going as you progress as a player.
They're also playable.
Oh.
The very first entry-level Good Time is so playable, by that I mean ease of play. It also sounds really good, but when you're learning to play, if you have an instrument that's hard to play, it's disappointing, and it makes you want to quit. Whereas
right.
you can play this the way it's built, quality construction, and sounds good, you can actually learn on that and not get disappointed by the limitations of your instrument.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear you say that, because that was the mission when the Good Time was designed, was to give a banjo that a beginner could succeed on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to hear when that's accomplished.
I wanted to get one right away. I have one of the originals.
Yay.
I have the Gumby head. Why is it called Gumby?
Just the shape of the headstock looks like Gumby. and we kind of started calling it, and then customers started calling it that. And that wasn't intended, but it's now it's a term of endearment.
It is a term of endearment. So yeah. I kind of broke you down there. You were going through some of the banjos, and you said that if we start at that entry level in Tenbrook, but there's also other high-end banjos.
Yes, there are. There's the Good Times, and then you move into our flagship series, which are the Sierra, the Eagle, the Calico's even in there. Those are like the main, you know, traditional lines that we've always had that are, you know, the most, you know, out there being used. They just are road warriors. Mm-hmm. They last. They're beautiful. They have, you know, we have every kind of sound in that, so whatever you want to play, you can, and they're affordable.
Yeah.
For the professional line.
Right, exactly. I would call it the professional line.
Yes.
Okay, but then you have this other group.
Yes, there's the Tenbrooks, which were co-designed with Jens Kruger. And those are a very high-end sounding banjo and looking banjo. They have very good note separation, so, you know, classical music is amazing on them. The neck is, you know, it's a slightly different shape. You can get them radiused. And
radius, for the people listening, I'm also going to have you talk about Jens Kruger for a minute, who is phenomenal. But
mm-hmm.
the radius fretboard, as opposed to being flat, it actually it curves across from side to side.
Right.
And it's almost like a I don't know where the concept came from, but I associate it more originally with an electric guitar.
Yeah.
And that was just because of what was going on, and there are a lot of banjo players that play that, so that's an option that you have.
Yes.
And Jens Kruger,
yes.
who is from another planet, as far as I can tell, his playing and his dedication to sound and tone, I knew when he was helping design the Tenbrook and got involved. Actually, did he get involved in a different tone ring also?
Yes, he helped get us in touch with if not the oldest bell-making foundry in Switzerland.
Yeah, which is where he's from.
Right, and together with them, we have had a very special bell bronze tone ring poured that is the Kruger tone ring, and it has a very special resonant sound that you just don't hear at any other tone ring.
No, and if the listeners know who Jens is, if they haven't heard him, he spends most of his time around his home now, doesn't
mm-hmm.
he? He was a I don't know that he travels a lot, but is it North Carolina that
North
he
Carolina.
Moved? He and his brother Uwe moved there, and from Switzerland, bringing bluegrass back to this country at a level that both of them are great musicians. Sometimes I think because I focus on banjos because I play one, I've gotten to know Uwe over, but he's a fantastic guitar player.
Yes, he
and,
is.
And Joel, the bass player. Holy smokes! And you get all three of them. If you get one, you get all three. They
uh-huh.
show up. They show up together.
They're family.
But Jens is his approach to music and instruments in general. It's almost like he's a monk. It's almost like he's gone away and lived on a high mountain and come back and come with these ideas with him. And it's when he plays, it's almost like he's in a different place.
Yes, that's the most apt description
yeah.
I've heard. Yes,
it's phenomenal. So the fact that he's helped bring all these things he hears in his head, which, who knows? You know, when I hear somebody like Jens play, I always think, what is it in his head that he's not telling us yet? That for whatever physical limitations he hasn't got there, but yeah, for him helping you develop and that, get involved in that, that was a big step, I think,
mm-hmm.
because all of a sudden you have this man who every banjo player in the world who's ever heard him knows, and so he's getting involved in the design aspect of that high-level Deering, which is great banjo.
Yes, he's been wonderful, and we always look forward to his feedback, even if it's fix this or do
yeah,
this different.
That's right.
You know, he has spent the time, and he knows banjo, he knows players, he knows, you know, he can listen to a player's recording and know exactly how they set up their banjo.
Yeah.
He's that good.
He's very good. He's
yeah.
very good. Those are great banjos. Mark Johnson is a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And Mark plays an open back.
Uh-huh.
And where does that fit in the scale of it's in for people listening, Mark plays an open back. It's a very heavy open back banjo, which and Mark plays kind of a he calls
claw
it clawgrass. It's a claw hammer, but it has features that are unique to him. But that is where does that fit in that range of high end? Is that
actually his actual model,
his model
is more expensive than the Tembrex.
That's what I thought. I didn't want to say that.
It has a lot more artistic detail to it. You know, hand engraving of the wood on the heel, and then high end materials.
And the heel is where the neck basically connects to the body.
Right.
If you're holding it in your
yeah.
hand, that's actually
carved. It's carved out
mm-hmm.
By hand, each one personally. It's mm-hmm. not like a computerized machine doing that hand
mm-hmm.
carving. Gold plated. It's just very exquisite.
I've seen
the neck for that one is also very specifically shaped. It's a little bit wider, and that's part of Mark's style of playing.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring this up is Mark was just on the show yet again a couple months or so ago. And I knew this had happened, but he told me the story of he was afraid to travel with this banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And another point is students wanted one like his, but not at that price point, if we'll say.
Right.
So there was an innovative, I thought this was a great story. You can tell it about what happened to where Mark Johnson can now travel with, plays like his, looks like, I mean, doesn't look like his, but it's a different
it's similar.
Wood.
It's the same
similar.
Inlay design, but the
yeah.
materials are synthetic pearl.
Right.
So it's easy to take to other countries where they're not going to worry about what it's made of.
He was
of.
Afraid of those treaty issues
yeah.
on wood.
It's a major and, issue that
yeah.
that we're working with a lot of artists and, you know, learning the new regulations
mm-hmm.
on how to make sure everyone can still travel and perform.
Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, there was a real fear that with his clawgrass original that in the time that those treaties, and I don't know what triggered people to start looking at, I mean, it's a conservation issue, I get that, but...
Oh, for the rosewood?
Yeah, so...
The rosewood was the biggest part of the issue. You can read Reverb, they did a whole article about it, but China, the wealthy people, folks in China have decided that rosewood is what their furniture should be made of.
Oh?
It's a very, you know, sought-after
mm-hmm.
wood. So the companies that build the furniture started stockpiling and cutting it down in a not safe manner for the environment.
Okay.
So since that is a very hard place to fix, CITES, which is the, the convention for, I can't remember.
I can't remember either, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it handles endangered species,
yeah,
both
exactly.
animals and plants.
Exactly
what the word stands for.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have on the top of my head.
Yeah.
Which is a good endeavor. You know, they protect animals like rhinoceros rhinos, and there's a lot of that work that they do that's very good. But in this case, to fix that problem there, they made it a problem for the entire planet.
That's a good.
So those of us in the music industry world that are using small amounts of rosewood responsibly,
they can find you easier.
They can, but it's also making it so we can't ship that much outside of the U.S. without having every last little tiny bit documented, and not all of that has been needed before.
Yeah.
If you already have an instrument, there's a really easy certification you can do to where you can then travel with it, but it's pre that law.
Right.
It costs not very much and you can get it, but it's causing a lot of work for anybody that has
it. I thought that was an amazing story when Mark, I'm talking about Mark Johnson with Jamie Deering, was talking about so he could travel safely because he's got his baby with him.
Right.
He doesn't want it being hung up in a customs agent's hand somewhere, and he has to leave it for any point. So I thought it was a neat story. But I just think that's one of those things that, as we talk about Jens Kruger's involvement in bringing his talents to the design aspects and the sound and the tone, which is the real key, and then here's this effort with Deering and Mark Johnson to make this. I think it's a testament to not just that you have 100,000 banjos, and not just that you enter the market to that entry level and through this incredibly high level of, I don't want to say professional because your other ones are, but this higher end banjo that is second to none.
Oh, thank you.
But then you also do these other little things like, okay, Jens is going to help you create a different type, and Mark Johnson, you're going to work with him to, I think that's just kind of like indicative of what I think I know about Deering banjos. And I think it's a good thing.
I appreciate that. We are a very passionate company about banjo in general. And several years ago, you know, we were looking at the market and talking to music stores, you know, that we work with and customers at festivals, and it just really became obvious. People love the banjo. They do. They love hearing it. They love seeing it. But a lot of the people in the world that appreciate it were scared of it. So there weren't enough new people wanting to pick it up because it was daunting. So we took it upon ourselves. This was, you know, a good, you know, 7 years ago we really started this to start educating about the banjo and about how to care for your banjo, how to play the banjo, that it's not a hard instrument to learn. And that's really, I've really personally noticed a huge difference just going to festivals, whether it's, you know, stopover with Mumford and Sons and putting a banjo in someone's hands and showing them they can play You Are My Sunshine in 5 minutes. That has changed the way people view the instrument, and it's kind of breathing a new life that it's accessible, anyone can play it, and that was part of our mission to make it, you know, back to the American instrument it is.
And you do that in person, but you also have, I get email and on the website
issues about articles.
Yeah, stuff about how to do this or how to do this, or if you want to tune it or change the strings or do any number of things on there.
Videos.
Those things are available in videos, you also do a neat thing that I appreciate this also. You might have special edition good times.
Yes.
They might be like for, I don't know, seasonal or holiday or some other event coming up. So I imagine people will buy those because they're like, you know, limited edition and happen to celebrate a certain whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that. And then you've also gotten very big into six-string banjos.
Yes.
And tell people why that's happening. And it's mostly country music, but first of all, what is a six-string banjo?
A six-string banjo is a banjo that has six strings and is tuned like a guitar.
Like a guitar.
It has a slightly different scale, which is traditional to the six-string banjo.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a new instrument. It's been around for over 100 years now. Vega Company back in the day used to make them. So, you know, I know a lot of people think it's cheating and it's new, but it's actually got its own history, its own tradition. I know plenty of five-string players who also play and record on a six-string because it's a very specific sound.
Yeah.
And if you really want that sound and you already play guitar, go for it. You can play the songs you know.
Right.
Who's going to stop you? It's music. It's a palette, you know, a musical palette. So it's part of our mission of we make banjos, every kind. And that is a kind of banjo that deserves to have respect. And so we play that. It's now adopted mainly in country music, but also in blues, some jazz, because it was originally jazz and Dixieland.
Exactly. That's exactly
that was its history.
And the reason that they came about, you can help me on this, is the reason that this banjo was made that was then with a resonator amplified is because they couldn't play in a band and be heard when the horns and everything got louder in those old Dixieland bands. This was something to help them be heard. Is that correct?
And the banjos were louder than guitars back then.
That's right.
So, yes. That's exactly right.
Oh, boy. Well, you see them everywhere, and don't be alarmed if you see a country performer on stage and you count the strings and it's six. I'm okay with that.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
And you have, I think again, more than any other company, Deering, I think, is in that market more than that. Most of the time, I think if you're going to see one on stage with a country performer, it's probably going to be a Deering six string.
Mostly, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Just from my eyeball vision. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and
great.
It's not to say that any other tradition
shouldn't.
We are hugely supportive of bluegrass, mm-hmm. and we are happy to see the tenor banjos for Irish music.
I was going to say the tenor banjos.
They're coming back, which we were worried about.
I'm afraid to play
one
of those because I think I'll want one.
Oh, they're fun.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it looks like at one point my mom was really worried. It was before I was really full time in my position, and there weren't a lot of tenor players that were really out there, and it was getting a little concerning that tenor was going to die off, and it's such a wonderful kind of banjo, but now that's completely not a problem.
Wee Banjo 3,
phenomenal.
I love them. And they're playing four strings.
Yep.
And you go see them, and you wouldn't know it because their way of playing, you would think they're playing with a very, very thin pick, because mm-hmm. I've talked to them and interviewed them several times. I think, how do you get that fast speed on a four string? They're picking very fast with a flexible pick that allows them to get around. But that's a good example, I think, of the four-string banjo coming back into view. And you know who they are.
Oh, yeah.
What a wonderful sound that is. That's going to be a new – I think they're going to open up – more of a market for that type of Irish sound, which is not just traditional, mm-mm. but it's modern. But they don't ignore – if you talk to any of them, they know the lineage of Irish and music into American bluegrass. They're very good ambassadors. As a matter of fact, Ireland sends them out to do that, and they're playing four-string banjos. That's cool. That was neat. That was a neat little fix for my curiosity there. Okay, well, great. What else is going on this year? You sound like you're pretty busy.
Yeah, mainly, you know, the summer festival season.
Yeah.
Looking forward to another IBMA in the fall. Several great people are getting inducted into the American Banjo Museum Hall of Fame this September, which is Tony Trischka for education. Gosh, can I remember all of them off the top of my head?
John McEwen. Thank you.
And there's another one. Oh, my gosh, this is going to drive me crazy. That's another really good one. Hold on.
It's not worth losing your mind over.
No, but they're all just so wonderful.
I knew John. I knew Tony.
Yes.
So I would help you on the third name stuff. I'm drawing a blank.
Hold on. I can do it really fast.
That's what you say.
Yeah, the American Banjo Museum has done so much, like, with tenor over the years, and now they're bringing in five string and all as well. And if you've never been there,
it's a good thing.
Oh my gosh, here we go, Hall of Fame. Ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm so ready. This looks like the most recent. John McEwen, Tony, Roy Clark is getting inducted for promotion of banjo. Yeah, he was recently there and interviewed with them, which is amazing that he was out.
He was on my show a couple years ago, and it was for almost an hour.
Oh,
and because
wow.
I figured when I get someone like that, and I was so happy to get him on the show. And when he wind up, he learned that he learned these banjo contests.
Mm-hmm.
His teacher, he beat his teacher, and the teacher got a little angry with him, if you've heard it. And he's done all these other things, and he wasn't just a guy. He was a great musician.
Oh, yeah.
And a wonderful guy, anyway.
Well, he really is. He's quite a player and done a lot for the banjo
in his whole life. Yeah. Well, Jamie, thanks so much.
Jamie Deering, you're welcome.
I wanted to do this before, and I just forgot. So I saw you here today, and I thought we might as well do this and get it done.
I'm glad.
Thanks so much, Jamie.
You're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Our wonderful visit. Thank you, Jamie Deering, so much for taking some time to allow me to inquire about the Deering Banjo Company. If you've been listening to the program, and if you haven't, then I'll tell you this anyway. This program has featured not just Jamie Deering of the Deering Banjo Company, but I requested tunes from I will call Deering Banjo Artists, and they told me what they would like to play in this program in response. And so far, we've played the choice from Steve Martin, Mark Johnson, Tony Trischka, Ned Lubrecki. The last one that I got will play at the end of this show. It's from Bela Fleck, and Bela was very specific. This is the tune I want you to play to demonstrate the tonal qualities and of the Deering Banjo. So you've got to wait till the end of the show to hear that. It's an interesting tune, and nobody can do it like Bela. But I appreciate so much those five individuals for responding to me. They've been guests on the program, which I'm also very appreciative of. Well, why would you want to be accepted? It's fun.